So we are holding on Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis about 12 lines, about 12 or 15 lines from the bottom. Line begins Makai Mari. A little bit above the middle of the wide lines. We said in the Mishnah, Mois Shalakayim Menarech of the Cholah. We said that if there's coins left on a pillow before Shabbos, so we said yesterday it has to dafka be that they were left there accidentally, not if they were left there deliberately, because then it would be a Balsas L'Davar HaAser. Then we said you're allowed to shake the pillow and get the coins off. And the last thing we said yesterday was also that if instead you need the spot where the pillow is, then you just pick up the pillow with the coins on it and move it elsewhere. So now we're going to talk about is there another possibility about how to move mukta items on Shabbos? So Amar Rav Oshia, shachach arniki b'chotzer. If a person forgot his purse or his money bag, whatever, in the chotzer on Shabbos. So if it was in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, there's nothing you could do about it. But like this, since it's in the chotzer, so the only problem is mukta. Sort of Oshia says mania chaler kicker etinek umetatla. You would be allowed to put on top of it a loaf of bread or a baby and carry it. Therefore, in other words, so you're getting around the problem of mukta that way because you're handling the mukta item together with a non-mukta item. In effect, what you're doing is you're using the mukta item, using the money bag as a base for the non-mukta item, the loaf of bread or the baby, and Rav Oshia is saying that that's allowed. Similarly, same thing, if you forgot, even if it wasn't a money bag, even if it was something much cheaper, like a brick, that you left in the chotzer, and again, the same thing, you want to have that brick. Now, if you had designated that brick for some use before Shabbos, then there wouldn't be a problem anyway. It wouldn't be mukta, but we're talking about you didn't. So therefore, it's mukta machnas gufay, like money. Same thing, he says, mania chaler, kikar etinik, umatatla, you would be allowed on Shabbos to put a loaf of bread or baby on top of that brick, and then carry it that way. And, Amar Rav Yehuda bar Shila, Amar Rav Asi, not only in a chotzer, but, ha-machas shochu diskia, Malaya Mois, one time they forgot a whole saddlebag full of money. Diskia literally means du sakya, means a double bag, the way they did it in those days. Good morning, Yaakov. You would have saddlebags, like on a donkey or whatever. You'd have a double bag that would go on both sides of the end. The middle of it would go on the middle of the animal's back, and then you'd have two sacks hanging down from the sides, so the load is even. So one time they left a whole bag like that, full of money, bisratia, in a public street, which is Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, ubo v'sholos Rabbi Yechanan, so they came to ask Rabbi Yechanan what to do, and here you have two problems. Before, we were talking about that the money was in the chotzer, and the only problem is mukta. Now you've got two problems. Number one, it's in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and number two, that it's mukta. So they came and asked Rabbi Yechanan what to do, and he tells them, again, put a loaf of bread or a baby on top of it and carry them together. Now, what about that takes care of the mukta problem according to these various opinions. As far as the problem of carrying in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, so we're going to learn, actually, in the last parak of our Masechta, we're going to learn about the case where a person, for example, is coming home before Shabbos, and Shabbos is beginning, and he has his money bags and other such things with him. What is he allowed to do? Now, the Chachamim knew he's not just going to leave it in the street. No, a regular person is not just going to be willing to leave his whole money bag in the street. If we make him do that, he's just going to be Mechal Shabbos and carry it. So the Chachamim allowed him, in an extreme case like that, to carry it pachas midalat amos, carry it less than 4 amos at a time. So that would be the case over here. So far as the problem of carrying on Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, you'd be carrying it less than 4 amos at a time. So far as the problem of mukta, Rabbi Yechanan is saying you carry it together with a baby or a loaf of bread. Although this is how Rashi learns. Rashi says another possibility could also be you use a mechitza of people. You're able to have, in certain cases, it describes in Shulchan Aruch, it's relevant as far as Hilchos Shabbos, it's actually also relevant as far as Hilchos Sukkah and whatever. Sometimes you can have people stand one next to the other and form a human mechitza. You have rules about it, and we're going to learn, Bez Hashem and Erevin, we're going to learn about some of those, we're going to learn about those rules, but there is such a concept. So the Ritva over here disagrees with Rashi and says over here we're not going to allow him pachas midal ramas. It's one thing when Shabbos came in and he was still on the road and hadn't gotten home yet. It's another thing over here when they forgot the money bag in Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos, but before Shabbos. But whatever it is, you can at least use the human mechitza thing, and that takes care of the problem of carrying. And then again, as far as the problem of moving mukta, you use a kicker at dinner. Okay. So Mazutra says the halacha. So far we've had three statements: one about the purse in the chotzer, one about the brick in the chotzer, and one about the money bag or the saddle bag or whatever in Rosh Hashanah. So Mazutra is saying the halacha is like all of these, only b'shecheach, only if you left it there, only if you accidentally left it there when Shabbos began. But if you deliberately left it there, then no, you don't have the heter of kicker or tinnit. Rav Ashi Yomar Afila Shochach Nami Loi. Rav Ashi says, no, even if you forgot it over there, none of these heterim apply. V'loi Amru Kicker Etinik Ela Lames Vilvad. The only case where we say that you would be allowed to move something mukta together with a kicker etinik is only in the case of a mess, because of Bizoyin a mess, because otherwise the mess is going to spoil. So therefore the Chacham allowed you to do that, to use the mukta item in effect as a base for something non mukta and carry them together. So all of these Amiroyim we were saying so far are allowing it for other mukta things as well. So Rav Ashi is saying no, only for a kicker etin, only for a mess. With that said, there is an opinion brought in Shulchan Aruch from the Rosh that maybe you could do that also with a kli shemalach de lahet leiser. All of the things we're talking about over here, the money, the brick, the mess or whatever, all of them are a category of mukta called mukta machmas gufay, where the object itself is not a functional keli, and you didn't have in mind before Shabbos to use it for any functional purpose. And of course, in the mess you can't. You in the case of the mess, it's also no, you can't use it for any purpose as opposed to a keli. So the Rosh wants to say that with a let's say, for example, a hammer, maybe you would be allowed to use the kicker etinik method. You have, let's say, you left a hammer outside before Shabbos, and you're concerned it's going to get stolen or damaged or what have you. So we learned earlier in the Masechta, you're allowed to move it letzorech gufa, if you need the hammer itself, like the crack nuts. You're allowed to move letzorech mekoyma, let's say, if it's in the way and you want to sit down over there, but not mechama letzel, not where, for example, it's sitting out in the sun and you want to get it into the shade so it doesn't get ruined. But the Rosh says, maybe based on our Gemara over here, maybe at least you will be allowed to use the kicker etinik method. It's a method. So Shulchan Aruch brings that as an opinion, but then many other Rishonim disagree with that. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Abaya manach kapa akipi. Abaya, if he wanted to move bundles of grain on Shabbos, he would put a spoon on top of them and then move them together, which is this method of using kicker etinik. Rava manach sakina abau yoina umatavla. Rava, if he had around a shechted pigeon, so it had been shechted before Shabbos, but it hadn't yet been kashered or anything, and it hadn't yet salted or cooked or anything, so it wasn't edible yet, but Rava wanted to move it, so he would put a knife on top of it, a matalpala, and then move it together. In other words, Abaya and Rava are using the kicker etinik method to move something which is mukta. Amr Rabbi Yosef, kama charifa shmeitza de dardiki. So Rabbi Yosef, who was the Rebbe of Abaya and Rava, says, when he hears about this, how sharp are the teachings of these youngsters. So dardiki means the young people, means literally children. Sometimes you have an older Talmud Chacham uses it in a little bit of a dismissive sense. Like, you know, you're children, you don't really know completely what you're doing. So like over here, he's saying that. Like you think, Rashi says, you think you're so sharp, you think you're successfully using the kicker etinik method, but are you supposed to do that? You can only say that the Chachamim said this whole din of kicker etinik only if you forgot the thing there. When did the Chachamim ever say you're allowed to do it l'chatchila? So like this, Abaya didn't forget the bundles of grain there before Shabbos. Rava didn't forget the bar yonah there before Shabbos. So what are you using? What are you using? The spoon or the knife to be able to carry them? But the answer was, The answer was they're not just using the kicker etinik method. Actually, what it is Amar Abaya. So Abaya answers, actually, what it is Ilav de Adam Choshev Ana. After all, if it weren't for the fact that I'm an Adam Choshev, and therefore I have to do things in a way because people are going to learn from me what you're allowed and not allowed to do. If it weren't for that, I actually wouldn't have needed the spoon at all. Kappa, Akipi, Lomali, why would I have even needed the spoon in the first place? Ha-chazul mizgalayu. After all, a bundle of grain is something that you could sit on, or something that you can sit or lean on. So therefore, the bundle itself, not necessarily grain, maybe we're talking about straw, whatever it is, the point is that it's something that before Shabbos had a use. So therefore, it really isn't mukta. The reason why I'm using the spoon, I'm biased saying this because not everybody is going to realize that detail. People are going to think it really is mukta. So therefore, to avoid that people should not think that you're allowed to just openly carry mukta on Shabbos, I'm putting the spoon on it in order to make it look like I'm carrying it together with the non-mukta item. But really, the bundle is not mukta in the first place. And similarly, Omar Rava, Anna, Ilav de Adam Choshev Anna, Rava says the same thing. If it weren't for the fact that I'm an Adam Choshev, and people are going to learn from me what to do and what not to do, Sakina Abau Yonah Lomali, why would I bother putting the knife on top of the Bau Yonah in the first place? Hachazi Lila Umtsa. After all, yes, it's raw, but you could still eat it as raw. You could still eat it as raw meat. We've learned earlier in the Masechta that you could conceivably eat raw meat. Especially in this case, we're talking about a Bau Yonah, which is a soft one. We actually made a distinction earlier between bird meat, which is softer, versus animal meat, which is tougher. So animal meat you might not necessarily eat as umtza, unless at least you salted it and made it like beef jerky or whatever. But bird meat, we said, is softer, and you could eat it raw. So Rava is saying, in that case, then, I could have done that, therefore you can't consider this Bau Yonah mukta in the first place, and therefore really I shouldn't need a knife on it at all. The only reason I'm using a knife is just because people might misunderstand and not realize that detail and think that the Bau Yonah is mukta, and therefore because of that, I'm being machmer on myself and putting a knife on top of it. So in other words, both Abaya and Rava are saying, Rabbi Yosef, our Rebbe, is talking like we're not doing the right thing, like we're just trying to be tricky over here and show how smart we are. It's actually the other way around. Really, technically, we don't need the non-mukta keli at all in order to be able to carry these things. Fakert, we're being machmer and making sure to use a non-mukta keli together with the seemingly mukta item, even though it's not really mukta, in order that people don't learn the wrong thing from us and think that you're allowed to handle mukta by itself. But really, the items themselves are not actually mukta. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Taima de chazi la'umza." So what are you telling me then? In the case of the shechted bird, you're telling me, Rava, the only reason why it's not considered mukta on Shabbos is because conceivably you could eat it raw on Shabbos. Implying, "Holei chazi la'umza loy." So implying, in other words, if it wasn't something that you could eat raw on Shabbos, even though it's something that, let's say, you could feed to a cat or some other animal, then it would be considered mukta. Apparently, that's what Rava seems to be saying, that because it's chazi la'umtza, because it could be eaten raw by me, therefore it's not mukta. Implying, if it was animal meat, let's say, which is not edible raw by people, or let's say it was fish, like we talked about before, then apparently it would be mukta according to Rava. Does that mean lememra the Rava could Rabbi Yehuda svirle? Does that mean that Rava holds in the dinim of mukta like Rabbi Yehuda, where we have? And we've had before that Rabbi Yehuda, one of the many machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in Hilchas Shabbos and Yom Tov is the question of what exactly is mukta in terms of does something need to be mukhan, does something need to be designated before Shabbos that you're going to use it on Shabbos? Rabbi Yehuda says yes. So it seems like it comes out that the only reason Rava is saying this Bar Yonah is allowed to be moved is only because before Shabbos it was already something where he could have eaten it. The problem with that is, Va'amar Rava l'shamei, we find that Rava said to his shamish on Yom Tov, Tovi li bar avza, roast for me a goose, the shodi me'e l'shunra, and throw the intestines of the goose, the kishkis of the goose, to a cat. So we see, now the kishkis themselves are not something that the person themselves is going to eat. Rashi explains, now it's not that the intestines are not edible, but the verdict is, we're talking about on Yom Tov over here, a person doesn't eat goose intestines or things like that on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov you eat good meat, You eat the good quality stuff. So therefore, in effect, the intestines are considered not mukhan la'adam. They're not. So now, before Yom Tov, in principle, they would have been human food, because after all, during the week, you might sometimes eat them. But on Yom Tov themselves, they're not mukhan, because nobody eats them on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, you eat the good stuff. Nevertheless, Rava is telling the Shamash that he can throw the intestines of the goose to a cat. So you see that Rava apparently does not hold like Rabbi Yehuda, because if he held like Rabbi Yehuda, then we would say that on Yom Tov, that before Yom Tov it was Mukhan La'adam, now on Yom Tov it became not Mukhan La'adam, and therefore it should be also according to Rabbi Yehuda to move it. The answer is, Hasam Kibbin de Masrach, the difference is that in that case, since the intestines are going to spoil if he leaves them till after Yom Tov, Daita Ilavein the Esmol, then actually from before Yom Tov already he has in mind that he's going to give them to the cat. So therefore, it wasn't something that was originally suitable for human food and now changed status and became useful for animal food. To begin with, it was something that was designated before Yom Tov that he's going to give it to the animal to eat. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos mentions over here briefly and refers to something that they said earlier in the Masechta a little bit differently, which is that the goose was shechted before Yom Tov, the case is. So therefore, so at that point, the goose doesn't need the intestines anymore. It's dead. It doesn't need the intestines. So since you have in mind before Yom Tov that you're going to give them to a cat because they're going to start spoiling very quickly, then therefore it's allowed. As opposed to, Tosfos says, let's say you have a similar case involved, which we're going to be discussing something about this soon, involving pits of fruit that you ate on Yom Tov. No, or on Shabbos, the difference is until you actually eat the fruit, it needs the pit. The pit helps protect the food from spoiling. So therefore, the pits can be considered noilad in a way that the intestines are not. Okay, so the bottom line is, in other words, that Rava in fact does hold like Rabbi Yehuda, and nevertheless he says the intestines are allowed to be thrown to the cat to eat because he had in mind before Yom Tov that he was going to do that. So the Gemara says, "Hachinami mistabra de Rava k'Rabbi Yehuda svirlei." Yes, in fact, it's logical to say that in this machloitas about Mukhan on Shabbos and Yom Tov, that Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda. The Dorash Rava, because Rava one time darshin in public, Isha l'tikonis l'veitza etzim, a woman is not allowed to go in on Yom Tov into the storehouse of wood, little mehen ud, to take a piece of wood that she's going to use for a poker for the fire. The point is that the most wood is meant for firewood. So therefore, so before Yom Tov, she didn't have in mind that she was going to be using this particular piece of wood as a keli. It was meant to be used for firewood. So therefore, she's not allowed to take a stick of wood from there and repurpose it on Yom Tov to use as a poker to stir and then move and whatever the coals in the fire. And also for ud shenishbar, also the hasika be Yom Tov. Also, if you had a poker that was designated before Yom Tov, and then it broke on Yom Tov, also lasika b'Yom Tov, you're not allowed to then take that broken poker and use it for firewood on Yom Tov. L'fisha masikin b'kelim v'ein masikin b'shivrei kelim, because you're only allowed to use kelim that broke. You're only allowed to use whole kelim for firewood on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to use broken kelim that broke on Yom Tov. Because the problem would be that if they break on Yom Tov, then they're noilad, they're not mukhan, they were not designated before Yom Tov for that purpose, because before Yom Tov you intended to use them as a keli. So we see if Rava is saying that you're not allowed to take a piece of wood and repurpose it for an ud on Shabbos, then we see Shmamina, that shows that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that the problem would be mukta, because you're having in mind something new on Yom Tov to do with it that wasn't before. Tosfos learns a little differently, that actually in the first case, as far as taking a piece of wood for a poker, that's not an issue of noilad. There you have a different problem, is that she may shape it to make it useful for a poker. A poker needs to have a sharp tip, for example, to be able to move around the coals easily, so she might do that. But so then the proof would really be from the second part, where he's saying that only if a keli was broken before Yom Tov are you allowed to use it for firewood, but not if it broke on Yom Tov, because before Yom Tov you didn't have it designated that you were going to use it for firewood. So we see that Rava in fact does hold like Rabbi Huda. So therefore, returning to our original case over here involving the shechted pigeon on Shabbos, yes, since it was shechted before Shabbos, it was shechted before Shabbos. And it would have been, since it's raw, it would have been mukta if it weren't for the fact that since it's a bird, it is edible raw, and therefore Rava is saying, really, therefore, it's not really mukta at all, and the only reason why he's putting a knife on it in order to move it around on Shabbos is just so people don't misunderstand and think that you can carry mukta items. But really, in and of itself, is not mukta. Okay. Mishnah says, on Shabbos, after you've eaten the meal and you have left, there are bones on the table, there are shells of nuts on the table, you're allowed to remove them from the table by hand, which means, in effect, that Bishamai does not consider that there's a problem of moving them because of mukta. Or Bishilul Oimim, Bishilul says no. There is a problem with mukta, therefore, misalak is a tavla kula, therefore what you have to do is remove the entire tavla, or minara, and shake it out. The tavla, a couple of different explanations what the tavla is. One is that it means like a breadboard that's on the table. So you cut the bread on it, so therefore at the end you have pieces of bread left on it, you have bones and whatever on it. The other explanation that Amram says in Pirush HaMishnayos is the tavla is like a board that goes under the table on the floor. It's where all of the crumbs and all of the bones and everything, you fall onto them or you drop them on there during the meal, and afterwards you take that board or like nowadays you might use like a cloth that goes on the floor or something and shake it out. So in other words, Basilil is saying you can't move the bones or the shells or whatever directly, because they would be mukta. So in other words, it comes out so far that Bais Shammai holds like Reb Shimon, who doesn't hold so much of the concept of mukta, and Bais Hillel would hold like, good morning, Izzy, where Bais Hillel would hold like Rabbi Huda. So we'll see about that in the Gemara. Rashi learns that we're talking about over here bones that are not edible by dogs and shells of nuts that are not edible by animals. Tosfos disagrees with that and says that no, actually we are talking about bones that are soft enough to be able to or have marrow in them or whatever and could be eaten by dogs. And shells also, we're not talking about nutshells or whatever, which no creature is going to eat them. Rather, we're talking about, let's say, for example, peels of fruits or whatever, where you could feed them to animals. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Ma'virin milifnei ashulchan perurin pochas b'kazayis. You're allowed to take off from the table on Shabbos pieces directly by hand, pieces of bread that are less than a size of a kazayis. That are less than the size of a kazayis, because those already you can feed to animals. The seor shel afunin, also you're allowed to take off on Shabbos the pea pods. Seor literally means the hair, but it means, in other words, the pods that you have, like when you eat green beans or other vegetables like that, you have, they come inside a pod, so those are called seor shel afunin. Similarly, you're allowed to remove on Shabbos the hair or pods or whatever of lentils, because all those things can be eaten by animals. So according to Rashi, the distinction is that the bones and shells of the first part of the Mishnah are not edible by animals. Therefore, we have the machlokes b'shamay b'sivol, whereas here we're talking about ones that are edible by animals, and therefore you'd be allowed to remove them. According to Tosfos, the distinction is that we're gonna go on to say that this part of the Mishnah is according to Reb Shimon. So Reb Shimon, we know, that doesn't hold of mukta so much, so therefore according to him, you would in fact be allowed to take them off. We're going to see in the Gemara, actually, that the opinions of Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel are actually reversed in the Mishnah. So it comes out, Bais Hillel holds that you're allowed to take off the bones and the shells, and now we have you're allowed to take off the pieces of bread less than a kazayas or whatever. So it all works out according to Reb Shimon, says Tosfos. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Sfug, a sponge. im yesh le'orbe sachita, if the sponge has a leather handle, mekanchinbo, then you're allowed to wipe the table on it, then you're allowed to wipe the table with it, the table or the breadboard or whatever, on Shabbos, v'im lav en mekanchinbo, if not, then you're not allowed to, because if it doesn't have a handle, so most of the Mephoshim explain, and Rashi over here explains, many other Rishonim also agree. The problem is, if it has a handle, then you're able to wipe with it when it's wet without squeezing it out. But the problem is, if it doesn't have a handle, then as soon as you put it between your fingers, you're going to be squeezing it out. Now, if you have, there's also a further machlokas about whether there would also be a problem of, melabin, of cleaning it by squeezing it out. So you have one way of looking at it. There was a machlokas we're showing him on that topic. Does it matter whether the liquid that's in it is water or something else? Maybe you would say that what we've discussed before, that Tosfos, for example, learns in some places that the issue of malabin only applies if the sponge is wet with water, but not if it's wet with other liquids. So fine, malabin may or may not be an issue, but seichet, squeezing it out, which is, among others, a tolda of dosh, would be a problem. So if it has a handle, not necessarily are you going to squeeze it out when you use it, as opposed to if it doesn't have a handle, then not. That's how Rashi and most of the Rishonim look at it. The Ravid has a different explanation of it, which is, either way, you're going to squeeze it out. I mean, come on, you wipe things down with a wet sponge, it's going to get squeezed out. The difference is, he says, if it has a handle, then it's more like a keli. So it's more like a keli, it's more like a bottle, the same way as you're allowed to pour water out of a bottle on Shabbos. The same way, if the sponge has a handle, then you're allowed to hold the handle and use the sponge. Eye water gets squeezed out of it, we don't care, because at that point we're not considering it a sponge, we're considering it a keli. That's according to the Ravid. Okay, so it would depend on whether it has a handle or not. The Chum say, Bein kach or bein kach nito b'Shabbos. Either way, you're allowed to handle it on Shabbos. And then you have, there's actually different Yosois over here. You can see the words v'cham oimim are in parenthesis, because not necessarily does that belong over there. In particular, Rashi and Tosfos and the Rif don't have that. They just say there's no machlokas on this part. You definitely, you were saying that if it has a handle, you're allowed to wipe with it, and if not, then not. But either way, you are allowed to move a dry sponge on Shabbos. Whereas in Pirush HaMishnayos LaRambam, he does have it, and he explains that there is a machlokas over here. Where according to the Tanakhama, not only you wouldn't be able to wipe with it if it doesn't have a handle, but you wouldn't be able to move it at all. Whereas v'chamem and ben kach nito b'Shabbos, whether it has a handle or not, you're allowed to move it on Shabbos when it's dry. The ain makabel tumah, and by the way, also it's not makabel tumah because it's not the kind of keli. You have only midaraisi. You have seven kinds of kelim that are makabel tumah: clay, cheres, wood, metal, bone, etc. And a sponge doesn't fall. A sponge doesn't fall into any of those categories, therefore it's not makabel tumah. What a sponge is, by the way, it's kind of funny. The Oruch brings a bit of a funny thing about what a sponge is. Now, sponges grow in the sea. I mean, nowadays, usually, we use synthetic sponges, but in those times, they use the real thing, which is a little creature of a sponge, as a creature that grows in the sea. The sponge that we use for wiping is actually the skeleton of the creature. The Oruch has an interesting explanation about what a sponge is. He says it grows on the top of a large sea creature, a large fish or something in the sea, and when the fish sticks its head out of the water, its gaze would harm people or ships or whatever. So what Hashem does is he makes the sponge fall down over the creature's eyes so it can't see, and therefore it can't cause damage. What kind of creature the Aruch is talking about that the sponge protects us from, I'm not sure. Maybe a whale, maybe a shark, I don't know. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Omer of Nachman. Now, we had like this. Again, we had in the Mishnah where Bis Shammai is being makel and saying that you're allowed to pick up the bones and shells off the table on Shabbos, and Bis Hillel is being machmir. But Amar Rab Nachman, Rab Nachman says that's not how the Mishnah should go. Onu ein monu ela Bis Shammai k'Rab Yehuda or Bis Hillel k'Rab Shimon. It's the other way around. What we learned from our Rebbeim is that it's the other way around. Bis Shammai is machmir like Rabbi Yehuda, and Bis Hillel is makel like Rabbi Shimon. So it would be the other way around. Bis Shammai would say you can't directly take the bones and shells off the table. You have to shake off the tavla to get rid of them. Whereas according to Bis Hillel, you would be allowed to take them off directly. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about even if they're not edible, and according to Tosfos, we're talking about only if they're edible. Tosfos points out, now you have in Masechta Edius, In the Sefer Adias, you have the whole catalog, you have a whole list of Mishnayos, a whole list of cases where Bishamai is Makel and Bishillel is Machmer, and this case in our Mishnah is not one of them. So that helps prove Rav Nachman, it's not a solid proof, because after all, our Mishnah does have it the way you have it, and after all, you know, why is one Mishnah stronger than the other? But Rav Nachman is telling us that our Mishnah is backwards, and that fits with the fact that, in fact, you don't have this listed in Masechta Adias among the cases where Bishamai is Makel. Okay. We said in the Mishnah Ma'avirin Milifnei Shulchan Perurin, we said you're allowed to remove pieces of bread smaller than a kazayis off the table directly. So Masayile L'Rabbi Yochanan, the words of the Mishnah support what Rabbi Yochanan says. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan Perurin She'en Ben Kazayis also La'abdan B'Yad. Even though these pieces of bread are smaller than a kazayis, you're still not allowed to destroy them directly. So like you can sweep them up with the rest of the stuff on the table, but you can't just throw them in the trash. What's the proof for that? Rashi says the proof is the fact that the Mishnah uses the word ma'avirin, which means to remove it. It didn't say zirkin, you can throw them out. So therefore you see you can't just throw them out. Tosfos says, what do you mean? I mean, in the beginning of the Mishnah also, we said, ma'avirin ma'al shulchan atzamos uklipin. We said you're allowed to remove shells and then bones and shells. So therefore, so Tosfos says that no. The proof is actually, not only that, the problem is, Tosfos says, you actually have a Gemara that we learned in Brachos, where Rabbi Yochanan says you are allowed to destroy by hand perurim pochas v'kazayis. We had a case over there involving washing mayim achronim before the floor was swept, where there may be perurim pochas v'kazayis on the floor, and you're still allowed to wash mayim achronim over there, even though the mayim achronim is going on these pieces of bread and mooning them. So therefore, so obviously Rabbi Yochanan is not saying it's also, he's saying it's mutter to destroy them beyond. So therefore, Tosfos says, no, the proof over here is that the Mishnah is saying that these pieces, less than a kazayis, are meichel behema. If you weren't allowed to destroy them, if they're still considered human food, you wouldn't be allowed to give them to an animal. The fact that the Mishnah is saying you could implies that they're not considered food anymore, and therefore mutar la'abdan b'yad. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Seir Shalafunin, we said you're also allowed to remove from the table on Shabbos the pea pods or lentil pods because they're Meichel Behema. So the question is Mani. So who is that like between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? Obviously Rabbi Shimon, he's the less by Mukta. Obviously it can only be according to Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't hold of Mukta, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, these pods weren't royal Meichel Behema before Shabbos because the peas or the lentils were still attached to them. Rabbi Yehuda would say that therefore they're mukta for the rest of Shabbos. Once you eat the peas. The problem with that is Ema Sefer, but look at the next part of the Mishnah, where we talk about using the sponge, and it depends whether the sponge has a handle or not, whether you're allowed to wipe down the table with it on Shabbos. Asan the Rabbi Yehuda. Now we're saying something according to Rabbi Yehuda. Dama Dava Shani Miskavin also, where he said, according to Rabbi Shimon, it should be allowed, because you don't intend to squeeze out the sponge. So therefore, it should be mutter according to Rabbi Shimon. Only Rabbi Yehuda should be answering it. So what's going on over here? Is our Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon, or is it like Rabbi Yehuda? The answer is, Baha, Fibur Rabbi Shimon Moida, this is a case where even Rabbi Shimon would agree, because as we've had many times, Da'abaya v'rova da'amitavayu, because Abaya and Rava both say, Moida Rav Shimon, the psikresha v'lo yomos, that Rav Shimon would agree, if it's psikresha, that you can't. And here it's psikresha, that when you're handling a wet sponge, it is going to get squeezed out. So therefore, so that would be also. So again, the idea would be, according to most Meforishim, the idea is, if it has a handle, not necessarily is it going to get squeezed out, because you're holding the handle, you're not holding the sponge with your bare hands, therefore not necessarily is any liquid going to get squeezed out of it. And according to the Daivet, the vote is, even if yes, you are going to squeeze it out, it would be mutter because we consider it more like a bottle, like you're allowed to pour water out of a bottle. Okay, so the whole Mishnah, in other words, can go like Rav Shimon. Okay, continues the Gemara. Hani gar'in, now, when we talk about, we said that shells or peels of fruit can be mukta. So let's talk about as far as seeds of fruit. Hani gar'in the tamri amayasa, seeds from dates, amayasa means from Aram, from Syria. So now the thing is, you have two different kinds of dates. There are There are Meyosta dates, and there are other Gemara. The Gemara is going to say Parsiyosa dates, which are much better quality. So Rashi over here learns that Amiyosa dates are poorer quality dates, and therefore, to begin with, you're likely to give them to animals to eat. So you may end up eating them yourself, but primarily they're meant to begin with as animals. As opposed to Tamri Parsiyosa, or the good quality stuff, you wouldn't feed them to animals. You'd eat them yourself. So therefore, Sahani Garin and the Tamri Amiyosa, so the seeds, the pits of Amiyosa dates, shorter l'taltalinu, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos after you ate the dates. Horovachazi and Agav Iman, because they're suitable together with the original, with the mother, meaning with the original fruit that was on them, because again, the original fruit itself would have been Maichel Behema, and now the pits are also Maichel Behema. So they haven't really changed, so they haven't changed status, and even according to Rabbi Yehuda, that would be fine. Whereas the ones from Persian dates are also because the ones from Persian date, the Persian dates are much better quality, so you don't feed them to animals. So therefore, you have the problem that before Shabbos, the pit was part of the date, and therefore it was meant for Michael Adam, and now it's changing and becomes Michael Behema, and therefore you have a problem, and therefore you can't do that on Shabbos. Now that's if we go according to the Yehuda. On the other hand, when it comes to this din of whether something needs to be mukhan or not, the Rambam paskins and Shulchan Aruch paskins like Reb Shimon that you don't need mukhan, and therefore there's a different reason. Tamri Amiyosa, what happens is the pit still has some of the fruit on it. Therefore, you still have something on the pit itself, which is edible. You could still continue eating the rest of the fruit that's still stuck to the pit. As opposed to Tamri Parsiyosa, are a different type of date where the pit completely separates from the flesh, and therefore all you have left is the bare pit, and therefore that would be mukta. Okay. So the Gemara says, Shmuel metaltalahu agav rifta. Now Shmuel, if he had a situation like that, he had pits from Parsiyosa dates on Shabbos, and he wanted to move them out of the way on Shabbos, what he would do is, he would move them together with a loaf of bread. He would put them on a loaf of bread and carry them. Now, that's similar to what we said before about carrying together with kikar or tinuk. One difference is that there it was the other way around. There you're using the mukta item as a base for the non-mukta item. Here it's the other way around. You're using the bread, which is not mukta, as a base for the date pits, which are mukta. With that said, Tosfos says that actually Shmuel didn't really need to do that, because he holds like Reb Shimon, and according to that, they wouldn't be mukta anyway. But rather the vote is that Shmuel wanted to be machmer on himself, like we said before about Abaya and Rabba, that since they're Odom Choshev and people are going to learn from them, so he didn't want that people are going to misunderstand from what he's doing and think that you're allowed to just handle mukta by itself, so he would put it on top of bread and carry it that way. Okay, so the Gemara gives over here a simon for a number of amiroyim that are going to be in this discussion now. Sharnam Shafaz simon. So the first one, the shin, was Shmuel, we just had. And then the rest of them, we have Rabba, Rav Huna, Brady, Rav Yeshua, and so forth. So Shmuel Atimei, so Shmuel, when he's doing this and is carrying and is moving the date pits together with on top of a piece of bread, he's going according to his own shita, the Amar Shmuel, Oysa Adam called Tzorka Bepas, because Shmuel says that a person is allowed to do anything he wants with bread. So the same way, for example, as Rashi says, even let's say, for example, you're allowed to dissolve bread into soup. It's not considered a bizoyan for food. So the same thing over here. You can use it in order to carry these pits. So we actually made a distinction in Brachas and also earlier in Or Masech, the Tosfos made a distinction between whether the use that we're using the bread for is going to make the bread itself inedible or not. If the bread itself is going to become inedible because of what you're doing, then maybe you can't. But over here, putting date pits on top of it is not going to do that. It's not going to harm the quality of the bread. You'll still be able to eat it afterwards. Okay. The next one, Rabba metaltalahu agav lakna demaya. Rabba, or actually Tosfos says Rava, would carry the pits together with a basin of water. So again, he would say that either he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, what we said at the top of the Amud, that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore he holds of mukta in a broader sense. So according to him, these pits really are mukta, because, again, before Shabbos, they were part of human food, and now they became animal food. So therefore, he would carry them together with a basin of water, in order to avoid the problem of mukta. Now, how does that fit with what Tosfos said? How does that fit with what we said before about there's a difference between whether you forgot it or not? Mela, we said before about the case of the Bar Yonah, we said the Bar Yonah is itself suitable to eat on Shabbos, but the pits are not. So if Rabbi Yehuda holds like, if Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda, then how is he able to do that? Tosfos says the difference is because in those cases, we're talking about something that could have been moved before Shabbos. So therefore, you have a distinction. If you could have moved it before Shabbos, the only way you can move it, you don't have the kicker a tinnik excuse. The only thing you can do is if the thing itself is not mukta, like Rava said about the Bar Yonah. Here, there's nothing you could have done. You're eating the dates on Shabbos. You weren't going to eat them, but you weren't going to take out the pits from them before Shabbos. Therefore, there's no choice in the matter, and therefore Rava will say that even according to the Yehuda, we're going to allow you to move it together with something non-mukta. Okay. Rav Huna Bered Rishua had a third way of going about it. He made them into a graf shori'i. Meaning, a graf shori'i means a chamber pot. So the din is that you have, even though what goes into a chamber pot, the waste that goes into it is mukta, there's no particular use you have for it on Shabbos. Nevertheless, you're allowed to move it out of the way because it's disgusting, and the Chachamim allowed you to do that. We've discussed that earlier in the Masechta. So what Rav Huna Bered Rishua would do when he was eating these dates on Shabbos, he would pile up the pits on top, he'd pile up the pits in front of him on the table until it got to a point where there's so much of it that it's mere stick, and then he would have a heter to remove it. But Amalei Rav Ashi La'amemer. But Rav Ashi says to Amemer, how could he do that? How are you allowed to do that in Chatchila? It's one thing. If you have a Graf Shorei, then you're allowed to move it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to begin with to put yourself in a situation where this is going to be a Graf Shorei and then have a Heter to move it. You can't do that. So Rav Huna Bered Rishua's method would not necessarily work. Okay. Another one. Rav Sheshis Zorek Lo Belishnei. Rav Sheshis would put them on his tongue and throw them with his tongue to the other side of the table. So this way, he's not handling them with his hands. He'd eat the date, and then like we do, for example, like people do when they eat watermelon, where you spit out the seeds. So he would do something like that. Rav Papa Zorek Lahu Achore Amita. Rav Papa would throw them behind the bed that he was reclining on. And Omru Olivar, Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos, they said about Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos, who lived at the time of the Churban. This is the famous Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos from the story in Hanizokin, which we have. It's, you know, this week is Tisha B'Av. We have this is the story in Hanizokin over there about the Churban with Kamsa Baukamsa, where the emperor's Churban was brought and Baukamsa made a mum in it, and the Chum were thinking to bring it as a Churban, and Rav Zechariah tells them you can't do that, and they're thinking to kill Baukamsa, and Rav Zechariah tells them you can't do that. So this is the same Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos. He would turn his face to behind the bed, and then he would throw the pits over there rather than picking them up by hand. So this is the same of Schaib and Avkulos, and actually the Brisa, and the Brisa continues over there, interestingly, with the expression that the Gemara mentions there in Perek HaNizokin, where Rav Yossi says the invisonos, the humility of Rav Schaib and Avkulos caused the Bismithash to be destroyed. Because in that story over there, if Rav Schaib had allowed them to bring a korban, then Bar Kamsa wouldn't have had an excuse to go master on the Jews. Or if he had said, if he had allowed them to kill Bar Kamsa, then he would have never been able to go and report back to the emperor, and instead he didn't, and therefore everything developed. What is the connection? So one idea is we see it, now Rav Zechariah ben Avkulos, of course, was a Tana. He lived long before all these Amuroyim that we're talking about, what they did as far as the pits. So in his times, all you had was Machlokas b'Shamay b'Hillel about whether you're allowed to move the bones and the shells and whatnot on Shabbos. So what we're saying is Rav Zechariah did not want to take it on himself to decide between b'Shamay and b'Hillel, and because he was humble, because he was honored, and therefore he found a method to avoid that. But we see the same thing in that story in the Gemara, where also, like, he didn't consider himself competent, he didn't consider himself roi to decide between what we should do and what we should not do, and therefore Rabbi Yossi is saying that was inappropriate. He was one of the great chachamim of that time. He should have spoken up and said, you know what, in this case it is pikuach nefesh, we are allowed to bring the korban, or we are allowed to kill Bar Kamsa, and his invasanus, his humility that he considered himself not roi to decide on that is what led to the consequences that we have there in Hanizokin. He didn't use the shminis for shminis. Yeah, I guess you could say that, yeah. Hadron Ach Noit Aladdin Musbinite. So he would throw it. He would like also take it. He would also like take it with his tongue or his mouth or something and spit it out behind the bed. So the actual din, as far as this, is that technically it says in Shulchan Aruch you might be allowed to take the pits and do one of the things that we said with them, move them together with a non-mukta item or whatever. But the common minhag is that you don't, that you just spit them out. Like, for example, when people eat watermelon on Shabbos and they spit out the seeds, then for sure you don't have an issue. Well, fine. However, and then afterwards, well, the plate itself is not mukta, so then afterwards you're allowed to move it together with the plate.
Yeah. Alexander.
Yeah.
Being humble is a mitzvah. How can humility cause an avera? And such a big avera.
Because any midah can be used for good or the opposite. Every midah has to be balanced with some other one. A person has to be humble, and in fact, the Rambam says a person has to go beyond and be ma'od, as it says in Pirkei Avos, ma'od ma'od hevish faruach. But you also need to know when to use anivos and when not to use anivos. And we're saying over here, Rabbi Yossi is saying a generation or two later that Rabbi Schaya ben Apkolos made a mistake and used his anivos in the wrong way. He should have. At that point, was no time for anivos. At that time, was time to take decisive action, and he didn't do that. In fact, I saw a vort on that related to that. You have the famous thing that says when the Sanhedrin is judging somebody, that we know that when it comes to dinin nefashos, you don't start from the greatest person in the Beis Din. You start from the junior member of the Beis Din, and then you work your way up because you don't want, for example, you don't want that the senior member of the Beis Din, the Av Beis Din, or whoever is going to say his opinion, and everybody else is just going to fall in line and follow him. So the problem was over here, according to this, that Rabbi Schaya ben Apkolos really was one of the greatest Talmid Chacham over there, but he considered himself to be like one of the junior ones. So he spoke up and said, you can't do this, and maybe he figured, well, in that case, the other Chachamim will say their opinions, and some of them may or may not disagree with me. The problem was, he really was greater than all the Chachamim there, and therefore all of them followed him. So that was the problem, where he uses Anivos the wrong way, thinking that he is, that he's not what he really is.
By that logic, Moshe Rabbeinu should have been punished for refusing to go to represent the Jewish people, to speak to the Jewish people.
He was punished for refusing to go. In fact, Rashi mentions over there that he lost the ability to be Kohen Gadol. The original plan Hashem had was that Moshe was going to be not only the leader of the Jewish people, but also the Kohen Gadol. But because he refused and because he argued with Hashem all of that, therefore he lost that privilege. And he, or actually have a machlokas in the Gemara, whether he himself was a Kohen, but his children definitely did not get the Kohanah. His children remained Levim. So yes, that is a consequence that Moshe got as a result of being too on of and not willing to listen to Hashem and take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim.
As opposed to the story of Bar Kamsa, the whole Jewish people was punished for 2,000 years. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't become Kohen Gadol was just a punishment to him.
It's also for all of his descendants, but anyway, the difference is also that in that time, at least Moshe did eventually agree to go. Here, Rabbi Schaya ben Apkolos eventually caused that they didn't kill Bar Kamsa and they didn't bring the korban, and everything developed from there. All right, anyway, let's go on. We still have ground to cover, but every midah has to be used. Every midah has to be used in its appropriate way. There's an appropriate time for anivus. There's an appropriate time for gaiva, the shminis shibashminis, like Ellie said. There's an appropriate time for kas. There's an appropriate time for calmness, etc. Each one has to be used in its proper time and its proper place. And Rabbi Yossi is criticizing Rabbi Schaya ben Apkolos for using it inappropriately. All right, Mishnah says, Chavis Shenishbara, if a barrel of wine or oil or what have you breaks on Shabbos, Matzilin Hemena Mazen Sholosh Sodas, you're allowed to save 3 meals worth of the wine or whatever from it on Shabbos. Meaning, now Rashi says, we learned previously in Or Masechta, that if you're using one large keli to catch it, then you're allowed to save as much as you want. Same way as we had, if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, you're allowed to take one gigantic basket and take in as much food as you want. But if you're using separate kelim, then you limit it to 3 sudas worth. And the reason is because, similar to what we said in the case of a fire, because you may come to do some kind of malacha on Shabbos. You might try fixing the barrel. You might carry kelim through Rosh Hashanah, whatever. So therefore, so you're only allowed 3 sudas. But you're allowed to tell other people, come save for yourselves, meaning each person can save 3 meals worth of wine from the barrel. Now, what you're not allowed to do is put a sponge there when you put a sponge and soak up some of the wine and then have the sponge drip into another keli, you can't do that. Rashi says the reason is gzeira, because you might squeeze out the sponge. Tosfos says that even if the sponge has a handle, like we said on Omer Aleph, it would be also because it's uvd in the chol, because doing things like you do on a weekday, and in general we've said there are certain things the Chum asked you to do on Shabbos because there are things that you do like you do on a weekday, and among other things, they might lead you to do a malacha. So in this case, it might lead you to do a malacha of actually squeezing it out or whatever. Okay. Tosfos had also mentioned over there, by the way, that this is only if the barrel actually broke and the wine is actually pouring out, but if it cracked and you just have drops that are dripping out, then you're allowed to save as much as you want, because then you're not in such a panic to make sure that you get it before it all spills away, and therefore we're not so worried that you're going to bring Kalim through Rosh Hashanah or do other malachas. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Ein soichtin es haperis lahotzi mehen mashkin. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to squeeze out fruits to get juice out of them, because you're doing mefarik, which is a tolda of the malacha of dosh. Dosh is you're taking the grain out of its shells, and every year you're taking the liquid out of its container in the food. And also the im yotzu me'atzman, also if the liquid comes out of the fruit on Shabbos, asurin, then it would be also to drink that liquid on Shabbos, because you might come to actually squeeze it. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. If the fruit was meant before Shabbos that you plan to eat it, so let's say we're going to discuss in the Gemara what kind of fruit we're talking about, but let's say hypothetically. If we were talking about, let's say, for example, grapes, that you plan to just eat the grapes, and then some juice oozed out of them on Shabbos, then hayotze mehen mutter, then what comes out of them on Shabbos would be mutter, because then you're not going to, we don't know if you make a gzeira, you might squeeze it, because you weren't planning to squeeze it, you were planning to eat them. The im lamashkin, if you had these grapes or whatever set aside to use for juice, then hayotze mehen also, then Rabbi Yehuda says, then I agree that it would be also to drink the juice that came out of them on Shabbos, because then you might actually squeeze them yourself. Another din, chalos dvash shariskan me'erev Shabbos, honeycombs that you broke up before Shabbos. So now again, once you break up the honeycomb, usually the honey starts flowing out on its own. But still, if honey flows out of it on Shabbos, asurin, there's still also to have the honey, because you might still, fine, if you crush the honeycombs, the honey is flowing out on its own, but on the other hand, we're making a gzeira, Rashi says, because you might not crush the honeycombs before Shabbos, and then you're going to crush them on Shabbos, and that would be a malacha. Says it's mutter, because the fact is, it's already crushed, and therefore you're not going to come to squeeze it. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tana, we learned in a Braisa about the first case in the Mishnah about the barrel that broke, where we said you're allowed to save 3 meals worth of the wine or oil or whatever, but you're not allowed to soak it up with a sponge. So Tana, we learned in a Braisa. Lo yisbeg b'yayin, you're not allowed to soak it up with a sponge in the case of wine. V'lo yitapeach b'shemen, in the case of oil, a normal thing that you would do during the week is you would stick your hand into the oil, and then some of the oil sticks to your hand, and then you would wipe it off on a keli. And you would do that over and over, and that way you'd get more and more of the oil. So you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So you don't do things on Shabbos like you do on weekdays. Because again, that might lead you to do actual malachas, such as fixing the barrel or carrying an Rosh Hashanah or whatever. You mind just putting yourself on mute? Okay. Continues the Mishnah. The Mishnah continued, Ein soich den asaperis, you're not allowed to squeeze fruit on Shabbos. And we had the machlokes of Yehuda and the Chachamim. What happened? Is there a difference between fruit that you meant before Shabbos to eat versus that you meant to squeeze? So, Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Moida Hoyer of Yehuda Lachachamim Bezeis Man Novim. Rabbi Yehuda does agree with the Chachamim when it comes to grapes and olives, even if you meant them to eat. Most grapes and olives are squeeze to make wine and oil. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that if the juice oozes out on Shabbos, it's also because you might come to squeeze them. My timer, that's why. Why is that? Given the l'schitin, you know, because since they're usually meant for squeezing, Yohiv Daite, therefore he might have in mind to actually squeeze them, and squeezing them would be malacha daraisa, and therefore we're not going to allow him to drink the juice that comes out of them on Shabbos. V'ula Amar Rav. Now that was according to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. On the other hand, Ula says in the name of Rav, Cholo Koyer Rabbi Yehuda Af Bezeis Manovim. No, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees even by olives and grapes, because the fact of the matter is you had these olives and grapes that you designated in order to eat rather than in order to drink, rather than in order to squeeze. Rabbi Yechanan Omar, Rabbi Yechanan says, Halacha could Rabbi Yehuda b'shar peiris. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda with other kinds of fruits. The ein halacha could Rabbi Yehuda b'zeis and anovim. The halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to grapes and olives, implying that this is a third opinion, implying that yes, not really a third opinion, like what Rav had said, that Rabbi Yehuda does disagree by grapes and olives as well. He would hold that if the juice oozes out from them on Shabbos, as long as he had them designated for food before Shabbos, not for juice, then it would be mutter. And Rabbi Yechanan is saying that yes, there is such a machlokas, but the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda in him as far as grapes and olives. The halacha would be like him as far as other food. And another way of looking at it, Omer Rabba, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, Moida Hoya Rabbi Yehuda Lacham Bezeisim Anovim. The Chacham, Rabbi Yehuda does agree with the Chachamim, as we said before, when it comes to grapes and olives. Moidim Chachamim, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Shire Peris. On the other hand, the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to other kinds of fruits, where other kinds of fruits are not usually squeezed. Then the Chachamim would agree that if the juice comes out of them on Shabbos, you would be allowed to drink it. In that case, if Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim by grapes and olives, and the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda by other fruit, then where's the Machlokas? So what's the Machlokas then? So he says to him, L'chit tashkach. When you find, in other words, if you look into it, you'll find something that they're arguing about. So what is the machlokas? Rav Nachman Reitzchok says it's logical to say that they're arguing about berries and pomegranates. Now, berries and pomegranates, some people squeeze them, but they're not as commonly squeezed as grapes and olives. So now you'd have the machlokas. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, zeisim shemoshach mehen shemen. Olives that oil flowed out of them. Or grapes that wine flowed out of them, the ichnisan, and you gathered together the grapes or the olives to begin with, bein la'oichel bein la'mashkin, whether you were to begin with gathered them together to use them for food or to use them for liquid, hayotze mehen osur, then whatever comes out of them is osur. But if berries where juice flowed out of them, or pomegranates where wine flowed out of them, Rashi explains that pomegranate juice is called wine because it's tart. It has a tartness to it like wine does. So that kind of thing, if you gather them together for food, then what oozes out of them would be mutter, because again, since you meant them for food, we're not worried that you're going to come to squeeze them on Shabbos. If you gathered the berries or the pomegranates before Shabbos and you intended to squeeze them, or stam, if you didn't decide one way or the other, then hayotzmehen also divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Then Rabbi Yehuda would say that either way, it's that in those cases also because you might come to squeeze them on Shabbos. Also, where the Chum say either way it would be also, whether you gathered them for food or for drinks, either way it's also because you might come to squeeze them on Shabbos. Now, so Rashi points out the Braisa is not really a solid proof that they're arguing about Tussim Berimonim, because you could say that maybe they actually argue about all different kinds of fruits. And maybe though Rabbi Yehuda is saying that even berries and pomegranates, where many people squeeze them, it would still be mutter if you meant them for food. But not necessarily does that show that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim would agree on other kinds of fruits. Let's say, for example, apples or whatever, that it would be mutter to drink the juice that oozed out of them. So we have a Rashi points out later in the sugya, which we'll learn this evening, Bez Hashem, you have another Braisa on the subject which mentions that the Chacham agree with Rabbi Yehuda by other fruit, but maybe that Braisa is only according to Rabbi Yehuda. So that's why Rav Nachman is saying it's only mistabu. It's logical to say that this is how it is, but not necessarily can we prove solidly from this Braisa that that's how it is. But so far, this is what we're saying is, well, I mean, we'll take up the discussion later on, but so far, was saying that, at least according to this way of looking at it, that Rabbi Yehuda would agree when it comes to grapes and olives that regardless the juice that comes out of them is usur, whereas when it comes to berries and pomegranates, that's where there would be the machloikas. And then, as we're going to say later on, when it comes to other kinds of fruits, there wouldn't necessarily be a machloikas at all. The chum would agree that's fine because those fruits are not normally squeezed. Yes, because the fact that juice is coming out, he might, and he's going to drink that juice. He may come to squeeze it in order to get more juice out, and that would be a malacha. Tosfos actually has a different understanding of it over here. We said over here, shemoshach mehen means that juice oozed out of them. Tosfos says that's not what it means. It means that he actually started squeezing them. It means that he started squeezing them beforehand, and now he gathered them together. And the question is, now that he started squeezing them, when he gathered them together, is it because he plans to squeeze them more later, or is it because he plans now to use them for food? So we'll continue this evening. Bez Hashem, we'll discuss more ins and outs of these halachas. But one thing is, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that nowadays you have many other fruits that it's very common to squeeze. Since the halacha is like a chachamim, not like Rabbi Yehuda, then we're going to say any fruit which is commonly enough squeezed, then you have an issue with the juice of it on Shabbos, and therefore that can apply to many different kinds of fruits nowadays. In Shulchan Aruch, for example, it mentions lemons. So you have actually a machlokas aposkim. Would you be allowed to squeeze lemons, let's say, for lemon juice on Shabbos? Now, we're going to talk about later on, if you're squeezing it over food, let's say, for example, you're having fish on Shabbos and you're squeezing a lemon over it to improve the flavor, that we're going to say is mutter because we said before it was oichel and now it's also oichel. The whole problem with squeezing out juice is before you had it was part of the oichel, it was part of the food, and now it's a mashke. So if you're squeezing it over food, then it was oichel, and now it still is oichel, and therefore that's allowed. But let's say, for example, squeeze out a lemon for lemon juice, or in order to make lemonade or whatever, there you have a machlok as a poskim, whether it would be allowed or not. Okay. So we'll continue with this topic tonight, Bez Hashem.